today on Family Talk.
Hello, everyone. I'm Dr. James Dobson, and you're listening to Family Talk, which is a production of the James Dobson Family Institute. Today, we're going to hear the concluding half of a speech that we began listening to yesterday. It features the late Zig Ziglar. He was a passionate man of God, and if you heard the program last time, you understand just how dynamic of a speaker he was. Before you hear the end of this presentation today, I want to read something that Zig's son Tom said at his dad's funeral. What he shared then illustrated just how dedicated his father was to boldly proclaiming the gospel. Tom said, and I quote, "Dad went to bed every night knowing that he had only one person to please, and that was his Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ." Imagine the boldness of being able to go out on a stage knowing that there was really only one member of the audience that mattered. You see, he knew his responsibility was to share God's truth in love. And because people identified with him, they wanted to hear what he had to say. Zig Ziglar passed away in 2012, but he was a celebrated author and a highly sought-after speaker. He also founded an organization called Ziglar Incorporated, which inspires and educates business professionals today. I came to love this man. Here now is the remainder of the entertaining and challenging speech on this edition of Family Talk.
When I was first saved, I've been in sales all of my life. I'm proud to be a salesperson. I frequently in sales training tell people that with the exception of the ministry, the most integrity is required by their professional salesperson. We are trained to persuade, and an immoral, illegal salesperson can persuade people to buy things they got no need for, no money to buy it with, and they got it overpriced and everything else. That integrity is at stake right there. You know, Emerson said, ability without honor has no value. We need to impart these principles and these things to all of the people that we have in front of us, and we need to get people excited about fulfilling that great commission. A very wise Christian leader once said, witness to everybody, if necessary, use words. I think that's wrong. I think that's a mistake. The only perfect person who ever walked this earth after every miracle verbalized what had happened. You see, atheists are good people too on many occasions. They just go into hell, but they are good people. Now, the difference there simply is that we as Christians, we've got the inside shot. John 14:6, and it said, "I am the way." Christ said, "I'm the way, the truth, and the life. No man comes to the Father except by the Son." A lot of people say, well, isn't that arrogant, narrow-minded? Well, of course it is. Thank God it's so narrow-minded, because all truth and all science is narrow-minded. 2 + 2 = 4, as any mathematician will tell you. Try to persuade him it's 5 and you won't get anywhere. Try to tell a map maker that Europe is south of America and they'll think you're crazy. All science literally is narrow-minded, and we need to understand that. When I was first saved, one of the first prayers I uttered was, "Lord, I'm a salesman, been a salesman all of my life. I started selling when I was 8 years old, literally selling turnip greens and milk and vegetables on the streets of Yazoo City, Mississippi." Now, I know a lot of folks claim to be from Yazoo City just trying to impress people, but I really am. When I was a boy over in Mississippi, my mama used to say to us boys, "I'm the 10th of 12 children, 6 of us still at home when Dad died, still too young to work." She always told us that, "Boys, don't ever ask anybody where they're from." She said, "If they're from Texas, they'll tell you." And she said, if they're not, why would you embarrass them by asking? You know, and I thought that made us a whole lot of sense. When I was first saved, I asked God, I prayed, "Lord, give me a method whereby I can witness to people and they will ask me, what is that?" Well, God gave me this almost instantly. If you see my lapel pin, it is an ichthus, a fish with a 7 superimposed over it. There's almost never a week goes by that somebody doesn't say, well, now, I know about the ichthus, I know about the fish, but what is that seven? I've had everything, but do you sell seven crown, or is that a Seventh-day Adventist? What is that? I said, it's a reminder. There's 7 days in every week. They all belong to Jesus Christ. There's no such thing. It's an oxymoron. There's no such thing as a Sunday Christian. You either are or you ain't. The day of the week's got nothing to do with it. I don't worship a part-time Lord, so I don't serve Him on a part-time basis. If I treat you any different on Thursday than I did on Sunday, that means I didn't know Him on Sunday. And so, ladies and gentlemen, when we start looking at God's manual for success, and I got to tell you, I believe this Bible from Genesis to maps. And sometimes I think the maps have been inspired. I believe everything that is in this book. And the bottom line is, when people... I frequently say that, courage is transferable. So is our faith. When we've got a catching faith, I had a friend of mine who lay dying of cancer a number of years ago. And as I talked with him, he said, you know, Zig, the thing I want to be is contagious. Everybody that gets around me, I want them to catch what I've got. Every born-again believer ought to have that same spirit. I want people to see that I've got something, I know where I'm going, and consequently, since I know how it ends and I know that I am the winner, why should I not be excited and motivated and happy here on earth? As a matter of fact, you know, Jesus prayed on earth as it is in heaven. I got to tell you, folks, if there were no eternity, and I'm obviously certain that there is, I would not go back to the deal I had for the deal I've got today under no circumstances. The joy that comes along with this, that is absolutely so incredible. And I realized something a number of years ago. I realized that the more I know about Jesus, the more I loved Him. And the more I loved Him, the more I loved you, and the more I loved that redhead. I got to tell you, we'd been married. I was, as I said, 45. I got married at age 20. I was saved. I'd been married to her 25 years. I've always loved that woman. I can tell you the moment I laid eyes on her, it was on September the 15th, 1944, 9:08 p.m., YWCA, Jackson, Mississippi. I got to tell you that I was smitten with her from the first instant I laid eyes on her. 2 years, 2 months, and 11 days later of relentless pursuit, and she finally said yes. I got to tell you, when we had been married about 30 years, I was saying things that bothered me, but I told them because they were the truth. I believed it. I knew it in my own heart. I said, my wife of 30 years is more beautiful today than she was the day I married her on her wedding day. And why did that bother me? Very simple. It didn't make sense. And you see, I am logical. It didn't make sense. How could a woman been married to me all of those years be more beautiful than she was on her wedding day? And then we went to Israel. And folks, I got to tell you, it was a life-changing experience. And I'll admit the emotion that was involved there. Yes, there was. I'd walked into the tomb where they said He had been laid. I'd served the Lord's Supper as a deacon in the Garden of Gethsemane. We spent a lot of time around the Sea of Galilee where much of His ministry had taken place. We saw a whole lot of things. And on Sunday morning at the church service, Pastor Ben Glosson from Hazelhurst, Georgia, was up preaching a powerful sermon. And as he was preaching this sermon, right in the midst of it, he broke out in song and had a beautiful singing voice. How great thou art. And as he was singing, I became aware of the fact that my eyes were just leaking tears. I was crying profusely. 99 times out of 100, God speaks to me in His book. There have been 3 or 4 occasions where He was so real, it was almost as if it was audible. And the Lord said to me that morning, let me tell you why your wife is more beautiful to you today than she was on your wedding day. I'm letting you look at her through my eyes. And I see perfection because she is forgiven. How marvelous it would be if we could all look at everybody through God's eyes. Wouldn't it be absolutely marvelous? How many more people would we be able to win to the kingdom? How much more could we have, ladies and gentlemen, in this world of ours, in the joy that comes from bringing somebody into the kingdom? I've had that privilege on many numbers of occasions. Love your wife. Court your wife. Honor your wife. I know you already know this. You've said it a few hundred times, but do you really believe it? Men and women are different. We say it all the times, don't we? For example, lady, let me tell you something about your husband. He doesn't give a hoot about what's on television. All he wants to know is what else is on television. And fella, let me tell you something about your wife. She resents it when you ignore her all day and then give her your undivided attention when the lights go out at night. She wants a hug when all you got on your mind is a hug. She wants you to court her on the front porch, in the front yard, living room, dining room, kitchen, bedroom, bathroom, back porch, backyard. She wants you to talk to her and listen to her. She wants affection. She wants intimacy. She wants you to know her. She wants you to be her protector, to give her an environment where God can use her and make her the woman He created her to be. And fellas, I got to tell you something else. Men and women are different, as I've already said. I've been out to dinner hundreds of times with a bunch of guys. I've never yet had one of them stand up and say, Bill, won't you and Paul and Charlie come go to the restroom with me? If ever do, I ain't going. Now, a bunch of women go out. You know, one of them stand to dinner and one of them stands up, doesn't say a word, just nods her head, turns around and collects a crowd. I mean, men and women are different. Their intelligence is different. They are more relationship driven. Women are just more driven, period. Many times a husband will come home, even if he's a pastor, and give you this wonderful idea to his wife, and she listens patiently and then says, well, I just don't agree with that. And he said, why not? She said, just because. Now, for a woman, that is a legitimate answer. For a man, that's stupid. But the woman's spirit, her intuition, clearly lets her know this is not a good idea. Now's the time to talk. Because when you combine the intelligence of the man with the intelligence of the woman, then you've got a team. You see, what we need to understand is the story of the little guy confronted by the three bullies, any one of whom could have obliterated him. Pretty smart little fella. He looked at the biggest of the three bullies. He looked at him in the eye, drew a line on the ground, backed up about 5 paces, looked him in the eye and said, now you just step across that line. The big bully confidently stepped across the line and the little guy grinned and said, now, we're both on the same side. Husbands and wives, you're both on the same side. Everybody in your congregation needs to know husband and wife are on the same side. When you form that team there together, that's when we have the power. That's when things come to pass. I got to tell you, folks, one of the reasons the redhead and I get along so well is we are perfectly balanced. She was the fifth smartest in a class of 400, and I was in the part of the class that made the top half possible. You put them together, and ladies and gentlemen, you've got a winning combination. You really, really do. Now, you need to love your wife, you need to court your wife, you need to get everybody there to do that. It's the little things that you do for each other that makes the difference. Little things. Like I tell everybody, you know, if that woman ever leaves me, I'm going with her. I think that's important. But many years ago in our bedroom one morning, we were having a quiet cup of coffee. And then suddenly she just looked at me and kind of smiled and softly said, you know, honey, I sure wish I were younger. And I said, for crying out loud, why? She said, if I were younger, I could be married to you even longer. How do you build a relationship like that? I'll tell you exactly how. It ain't the big gifts. It's not the big honeymoon. It's not the big anniversaries. It's not the big Christmases. It's not the new cars. It's not the big gifts. It's the little bitty things that you do on a regular basis. You need to find out what you can do to benefit your mate. I got to tell you, ladies and gentlemen, this redhead of mine is one of the finest car door openers in Dallas, Texas. She's been recognized as the best ever. Despite the fact that in the 2 years, 2 months, and 11 days of courtship, and then the 58 years of marriage that have followed that, she has it open her own car door at a dozen times when I'm with her. Every time I walk around the car, I'm reminded, here's the most important person on this earth to me. Here's the one I love above all others. It makes a difference. Little things. Years ago, I stopped carrying my money in a wallet. I folded it up and put it in my pocket. In the evening, I lay it on the bathroom counter. She started counting my money. And if she didn't think I had enough to cover emergencies on the trip I was going on, she'd go get me some more. That's not a big deal, but it says everything. It says, honey, I love you very much. You're very important to me. I'll just feel better. In case there's some kind of an emergency where you need cash, that you won't be delayed, embarrassed, or perhaps endangered. That's love, putting the other one first. I frequently accuse her of spending all of her time planning and thinking what she can do to please me and make me her happy husband. I try to create an environment in our home so that she will know that. You call my house, and those of you who know me know I always answer the same way. Good morning, this is Gene Ziegler's happy husband. Now, first of all, Pastor, I score a lot of points with that, I got to tell you. And I like to score points with that redhead, I got to tell you that. That is for sure. You need, fellas, you need to make certain that you're doing a whole lot of courting because everybody in your congregation is watching you. They want to know what kind of husband you are in addition to what kind of a pastor you are. They want to know how you're dealing with your children. Are you protecting them and raising them in the love and admonition of the Lord? When they watch you, if they figure that a man of God who's preaching the Word of God is succeeding in that area, then your credibility just absolutely explodes. It really does. Your most important congregation you will ever preach to is right there under your own roof. We call that the home court advantage. I gotta tell you, ladies and gentlemen, athletics, they always talk about that, but the real home court advantage is the home. If you can leave the pulpit and come home knowing that things are beautiful at home, you'll be a better husband, a better father. If you can leave your home knowing everything is fine there, when you get to the pulpit, you'll be a better pastor, you'll be a better preacher, you'll be a better man, you'll be better at everything. And Pastor, let me make this little suggestion. You must never, 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 ever be alone with another woman. That is one of the most foolish things you can absolutely do. Satan is after Christian pastors big time. You can absolutely count on it. You need to be careful about the internet, warning all of your congregation about it, because it is loaded with filth. It is loaded with temptation. It's loaded with an awful lot of other things. Temptation, is just absolutely one of those deadly things that really can disrupt an awful lot of things. We need to understand that gay marriage will destroy the family in more ways than you can possibly imagine. We need to stand up. We need to stand up for the family. That was God's first institution. We need, ladies and gentlemen, to understand that our core values are so tremendously important. We need to show and let it be seen where we are and what we stand for. We need to display the cross. And a few years ago, we had a Christmas party at one of the local hotels. I got there and they had a sign up, holiday party. I called the lady in charge. I said, ma'am, what's this holiday party stuff? She said, well, it's your party. You ought to know about it. I said, ma'am, we don't have holiday parties. We have Christmas parties. Oh, she said, but this is politically correct. I said, ma'am, you got to understand, I'm not a politician. I'm a Christian. Take the sign down, put the right one up. We'll have a Christmas party. When somebody wishes you a happy holiday during this Christmas season, what you ought to do is graciously thank them. Thank you very much. That's kind of you. But I'm going to go you one better. I'm going to wish you a Merry Christmas as we celebrate the greatest birthday in the history of man. The one from which we date the calendar, the one that changed everything about life. We need to display a cross in our front yard. I've got a big one out there. It's well lighted, and I've positioned it so the streets going that way can see it, and the streets going this way can see it. We need to let people know exactly where we stand. We have devotions in our company every Monday morning. We always say this is the most important meeting we will have in this company this week. You start the week on your knees. You start the day on your knees. You start the day. I told people, you know, for the last 30 years, I've read an average of over 3 hours a day. Read my Bible every day, read the newspaper every day, and that way I know what both sides are up to. I think, you know, I think it's very important that we understand that. We need to know that, ladies and gentlemen. We need to take charge and let people know where we are coming from. We've got the truth. We need to tell it. So far, I've never heard of anybody being shot because they told the truth. That is, in America, that is, we need to share our faith. Live our lives, let people say, I want some of whatever that man or woman has got. I want to find out where that joy is coming from. Because, ladies and gentlemen, we've got a lot to be joyful about. We got some things that we can do and should be doing right now. We need to let the joy of Jesus shine in our face. You know, a lot of Christians still walk around looking at the cruise director for the Titanic, acting like somebody licked all the red off of their candy. If we got that joy in their lives, we need to let it be reflected in our face. Now, no, that doesn't mean you walk around grinning so wide you could eat a banana sideways. That's not what I'm talking about. But it does mean, yes, you should have that joy in your life. Let people be attracted to us because, ladies and gentlemen, He is in us. We've already won. Act like champions. Act like winners. Doesn't make any difference. Ladies and gentlemen, I know exactly how it ends. And if I know how it ends and I know I've won, why should I walk around with a hangdog expression on my face? I walk around with a smile because I have joy in my heart. I know that I'll get to go see my little girl. I'll get to see my mom and my dad, my brothers and my sisters and my mother-in-law and my loved ones. I'll get to spend eternity with a redhead. I know how it ends. Let's lovingly act like the winners Christ Himself made us. Teach everybody in your congregation that they already have won if they know Christ. Always remember there are two places where everybody believes in Christ. One is heaven, one is hell. One believes soon enough, the other one believes too late. Make certain nobody in your congregation believes too late. God bless you as you preach God's word. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
This is Roger Marsh, and what a stark reminder of the duty we have to preach the gospel. I hope you felt empowered to share your faith to those around you. Go to today's broadcast page at drjamesdobson.org to learn more about our guest, the late Zig Ziglar. While you're on our site, be sure you also check out the Dobson Library. It's our vast collection of Dr. James Dobson's work over the past 40 years, all in one place. Search through the thousands of radio broadcasts, along with hundreds of articles, and all the blogs that we've created as well. This library addresses a multitude of topics, including parenting, marriage, and preserving a godly legacy. Whatever you may be going through, we have something that can help you. Our mission is to support you and your family. So go and take advantage of this interactive resource by visiting DobsonLibrary.com. Well, that's all the time we have for this week of broadcasts here on Family Talk. I hope you'll join us again on Monday to hear a new speech from former Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann. She addressed our donor event last fall and had some incredible things to share with our guests. So listen in on Monday and you'll hear that presentation right here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Roger Marsh. Hope you have a blessed weekend.
This has been a presentation of the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute.
Hi, I'm Dr. Tim Clinton for the James Dobson Family Institute. Who inspires you on matters of faith, family, and culture? If you don't already get it, sign up for Dr. Dobson's monthly newsletter at drjamesdobson.org. Each month, you're going to receive insight and news that impacts your family and solid advice that you can trust. Whether it's wisdom for parents, tips for building a lasting marriage, or discernment on issues your family may be facing, you're going to find direction, encouragement, and more every month. Visit drjamesdobson.org and sign up for that monthly newsletter today. And again, that's drjamesdobson.org. You'll be glad you did.